Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in which year that the Metropolitan Opera House held its grand opening in New York? Was that A, 1833, B, 1883, C, 1919, or D, 1929? The Met Opera opens in New York. Which year was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this very day back in which year that Chubby Checker appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show and performed The Twist? Was that A, 1951, B, 1956, C, 1961, or D, 1966? Chubby Checker, The Twist, Ed Sullivan Show, which year was that? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 22nd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1811, that composer Franz Liszt was born. Liszt was a Hungarian composer, virtuoso pianist, conductor, music teacher, arranger, and organist of the Romantic era, and was known for such compositions as Liebestraum. Liszt, born today in 1811. And it was 41 years ago today, 1980, that the Guinness Book of World Records gave Paul McCartney a rhodium-plated disc for being history's all-time best-selling songwriter and recording artist. 1980, today. And in jazz, blues, and Broadway music news, we have this article entitled, Eight Questions. Bill T. Jones, the 69-year-old choreographer and artistic director, on performing again. Moby Dick and why he doesn't call his work dance. This is published in Time magazine, September 13th through the 20th, 2021. You're still clearly burning to create after many years. How do you keep that fire stoked? When I am moved by a work of art, when I'm moved by a political situation, I immediately begin to think in my language, movement, space, and time. So it is still helping me understand how to live, not to mention that I have a company that must be fed. We're still fighting for the importance of this art form in public life. One of the concerns of your new piece, Deep Blue Sea, is the pursuit of an elusive we. What does that mean? We, the people, we shall overcome. We hold these truths. That is part of everyday parlance, and it's quite irritating. I am a black American who truly grew up thinking that we shall overcome, that there was a we that transcended ethnicity and race. And the more I've lived, the more I see these things are so deeply entrenched. So what's this we? This piece is a poem, a metaphorical rendering of wrestling with those stories using iconographic texts, Herman Melville's Moby Dick, Chapter 93, and Martin Luther King's 1963 Great March on Washington speech, I Have a Dream. What do those two things have in common? They are iconic texts that define the American sense of our community. Both those documents have grown dusty, taken for granted, and they must be returned to regularly. Mark Morris said, I can be daunting because I'm scared to death. Can you relate to that? I can relate very well. I come from field workers, people who understood that they are not that far off from the lash. I tried to explain this to my dancers. The young say, that's your pathology. I had young black people say to me a few years ago jokingly, but I think they were nudging me, we need to take a black power nap. You're performing with your own company for the first time in 15 years. Why now? I'm probably as much an intellectually speaking presence now as I am a dancing presence, but I don't want to yet give up the fact that the young people in the company and I are bodies together making a body-based art form. It's hard, but I have to try one more time. Can I sweat with them? Can I learn something? For me? For them? You don't like to call what you do dance. Why? I feel that dance in the culture is very close to mime. People feel it is an indulgence, somewhat esoteric, or little girls in pink. That's not what I'm doing. I'm doing a body-based investigation of art making. You have to find a whole other way to talk about it. It's not about entertaining you, although it can be. It's not about getting you sexually aroused, although it can be. It's trying to really rethink what this basic instrument that we all share is capable of. Two arms, two legs. Let's see if we can get together in a community with clear instructions. What happens? What would the 70-year-old version of you tell the 20-year-old? First, the world does not care if you want to be an artist. You will always be full of doubt. You will very likely never make a satisfying living. You may get hurt, and yet it is exhilarating. When it works, when you're firing on all cylinders, and there is a population that is leaning in to see, that can be rewarding in a way you can't imagine. Finally, do you mourn the ability to dance as you used to? Well, I do sometimes wish I had the motor I used to have. The impulse to move, the will to move, and the ability to move are all one when you're young. Now it has to be more thought about, which is its own kind of goal. This is written by Belinda Luscombe. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Music's Power Over Our Brains. Armed with more interest and funding, researchers are investigating how music may enhance brain development and academic performance, and even help people recover from COVID-19. This is published by Tori DeAngelis, November the 1st, 2020, in APA's Monitor. One of the most poignant early images of the coronavirus pandemic was of Italians playing music and singing from their balconies, even as the virus ravaged their cities. Others soon followed suit, including pop stars streaming live performances from their homes and choirs sharing concerts via Zoom, all trying to provide connection during a frightening and uncertain time. Of course, music has been bringing people together for millennia, and not just during crises. And in the last few decades, investigators have been training their attention on the so-called universal language of music, how it affects our brains, and how it might be used to facilitate health and healing. That interest is now being fueled by new research, attention, and funding. In June, the Global Council on Brain Health, an independent science and policy collaborative devoted to understanding brain health, released a report concluding that music has significant potential to enhance brain health and well-being for individuals of different ages and different levels of health, and making recommendations for future study. And they are adding COVID-19 to the conditions they are trying to ease. Babar A. Khan, M.D., Assistant Professor of Medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis, for example, is using a Sound Health grant to test a music intervention with patients who have delirium, including those with COVID-19. Delirium, an acute short-term condition marked by confusion and emotional disruption, afflicts as many as 80% of patients who are in the intensive care unit for respiratory failure, including those with COVID. If the intervention proves helpful, says Khan, it will be used immediately during the course of the current pandemic. And in rock and pop music news, we have this biography. Olivia Rodrigo, published in IMDb.com by Lorne Berman. Olivia Rodrigo is a soulful artist with a rare gift for emotive and empathetic songwriting. I think I'm good at knowing how people feel, how I feel, and being able to capture that, the Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter-actor shares. Her keen sense of conveying feeling has served her well thus far. Olivia's the star of Disney's High School Musical series, streaming now on Disney+. Acting has been something of a newish development for her. Singing since she was 4 years old, Olivia took up acting based on a recommendation from her vocal coach. Acting and music relate in that they are both about capturing feelings and moments as accurately as you can, she shares. Olivia exudes an intriguing paradox of being both exuberantly youthful and sagely an old soul. She seeks authenticity and bold expression in her music. My favorite songs are brutally honest and give a vivid look into the artist's life and mind, she says. Honest storytelling is my ultimate goal. The fact that Disney gave a 16-year-old a shot to write for such a big project is so awesome, she continues. I think the perspective of a teenage girl is so powerful and something that doesn't always get harnessed in its full capacity, too. As a teenager and a kindergartner, Olivia took voice lessons and then later piano lessons. At age 12, she began playing guitar. It was during this time that she began writing songs. I remember coming up with melodies and lyrics and writing them down in this pink, fluffy notebook that I had won at some arcade. I still keep that notebook on my bedside table, she says, laughing. Olivia is currently in the studio working on her debut EP. And as noted in OxfordStudent.com, June the 14th, 2021, review of Sour, the name of the album. Olivia Rodrigo's Sour is the perfect debut album. It draws on familiar genres and themes, which is probably why Rodrigo has been compared so much to the likes of Taylor Swift, who is credited on One Step Forward, Three Steps Back, a song which interpolates Swift's New Year's Day, or Paramore, for songs like Good For You. While it has echoes of these other popular artists, Rodrigo brings her own vocal and songwriting talent to the album. Part of the reason that Rodrigo has been so successful is that her album speaks to a lot of issues that teenagers and young adults face. The album opens with the intense, brutal, which speaks to the way that the expectations of being young don't meet up to reality. As Rodrigo sings, "They say these are the golden years, but I wish I could disappear."
As easy as rolling off a log, I found it easy, baby, to fall in love with you. It was as easy as rolling cigarettes. If that ain't easy, maybe there's simpler things to do.
James Taylor's cover of As Easy as Rolling Off a Log from his 2020 album, American Standard, introduces our local music news. It's entitled The Life and Times of James Taylor, the iconic musician on love, marriage, a new album, and memoir, and a lifetime of ups and downs that shaped them all. This is written by Jim Farber, published in Parade Magazine, 16 February 2020. On a chilly afternoon, James Taylor begins building a fire. Standing in the cavernous barn on the compound he owns in western Massachusetts, he slowly feeds pieces of wood into a small antique fireplace, nurturing the flames until they roar. "It's amazing," he says, "how warm these little flames can keep us." Warm enough, it seems, to heat a space that doubles as the private recording studio where Taylor has cut parts of his past five albums, including his latest, American Standard, the song from which is playing from. As its title suggests, the album salutes the Great American Songbook with Taylor's signature take on songs by writers of the 20s through the 50s, from Rodgers and Hammerstein to Cole Porter. Its release on February the 28th coincided with a major anniversary in Taylor's life. It's been 50 years since the release of Sweet Baby James, an album that made him a superstar at 21 and ushered in the singer-songwriter movement of the early 70s, flushed out by friends and or lovers of Taylor's, including Joni Mitchell, Carole King, and Carly Simon. When asked if it feels like half a century has passed since songs like Fire and Rain from Sweet Baby Jesus, James raced up the charts, he says, "Yes, I feel the full weight of those 50 years of touring, raising children, of my relationship with my wife and with my former wives. I feel it all. At the same time, the past is still very present. Today he's wearing a denim shirt, not unlike the one he's spotted on the cover of Sweet Baby James, and he just released an audio-only memoir, Break Shot, My First 21 Years, through Audible, in which he recounts all the drama that defined his life before he achieved fame, including a stay in a mental hospital, dangerous experiments with drugs, his parents' divorce, and his father's alcoholism. He discusses all of this and his music in the living room of his restored farmhouse with unbroken views of the Berkshire Mountains. A creative spark. He and his wife, Kim Smedjvig, whom he married in 2001, designed the house to their specifications in much the same way the singer has tailored the American standards on his latest album to his particular style. Instead of grand orchestral takes on classics like Moon River and The Nearness of You, he focused on his voice and guitar. "We avoided dressing the songs up too much," he says. "These are the standards that sparked his own creative life," he says in Break Shot. "I was emulating these songs when I was first starting to write. Carolina, in my mind, is informed by Oklahoma. Paul McCartney said that when he heard my song Mean Old Man, he thought that it was a standard." Oh, that's as good a review as I've ever gotten. "To me, the standards are the pinnacle of Western popular music. Standards take Taylor back to his youth, where he spent hours absorbed in music at the house he grew up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Today he finds himself longing for that dreamy time before the interruptions of cell phones and social media. That kind of space allowed you to construct mere, more coherent and larger thoughts, he says. Distraction is a modern curse. At the same time, he experienced significant traumas during his youth. While his father had enough fortitude to become the dean of medicine at the University of North Carolina, he also abused alcohol to the point where it killed his marriage and blinded both him and his wife to their son's growing mental issues during his teens. They didn't have time to notice what was happening with me, Taylor says. The singer's belief that we, as a society, don't shepherd young people into adulthood is one reason he decided to focus his memoir on his first 21 years. That's the time when you're formed as a person, he says. We don't consider it enough. Article skips down, ends with this. He's increasingly aware of the limitations of time. I'm essentially playing out my hand, which is as it should be. When I was 17, I couldn't believe that people who were 70 years old weren't an entirely different species. But when you get to be 70, you're still the same person. I'm deeply grateful for where I ended up, for my marriage, my family, my job. It's great. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that the Metropolitan Opera House held its grand opening in New York? Was that A, 1833, B, 1883, C, 1919, or D, 1929? Correct answer, answer B, 1883. As noted in metopera.org, the Metropolitan Opera was founded in 1883 with its first opera house built on Broadway and 39th Street by a group of wealthy businessmen who wanted their own theater. Enrico Caruso arrived in 1903 and by the time of his death 18 years later had sung more performances with the Met than with all the world's other opera companies combined. Almost from the beginning, it was clear that the Opera House on 39th Street did not have adequate stage facilities, but it was not until the Met joined with other New York institutions in forming Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts that a new home became possible. The new Metropolitan Opera House, which opened at Lincoln Center in September 1966, was equipped with the finest technical facilities. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day back in which year that Chubby Checker appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show and performed The Twist. Was that A, 1951, B, 1956, C, 1961, or D, 1966? Correct answer? Answer C, 1961. As noted in current.com, Let's Twist Again Like We Did Last Century by Henry McNulty. 50 years ago, pop singer Chubby Checker stepped in front of the cameras on the Ed Sullivan Show and sang his number one record of the previous year, The Twist. And it was a seminal moment in American popular culture. For the first time, the vast Ed Sullivan television audience, including tens of millions of American adults, got to hear and see what the young had been talking about for months. The twist, the dance that was sweeping America in which the partners didn't touch. Other 20th century dance fads, the Charleston and the Jitterbug among them, involved a bit of separate gyration as well as hand-holding. But the twist took it a step further. There was no touching. The dancers to the driving beat of the music moved their hands as if they were using a towel to dry their bottoms, while simultaneously moving their feet as if to stub out a cigarette. No lessons were required. It was a sensation. Ed Sullivan, a New Yorker, knew a hot trend and booked Checker for his October 22, 1961 show. After that, there was no stopping the craze. In 62, at least two dozen pop records with Twist in the title made the charts. Life magazine reported that in 1 week in October 1961, the New York City Safety Council reported 54 cases of back trouble, 49 of which were, quote-unquote, due to too much twisting. The twist generated dozens of other no-touch dances: the mashed potato, the pony, the monkey, the holly gully, the swim, the watusi, and many more. Each had its own moment, but none came close to matching the popularity of the twist. But by 1963, the twist was all but dead. So let's close out with Ed and Chubby.
8 o'clock, Sunday night, there's a man comes around and he makes things right. Everybody's feeling gay when they hear this fella say,
there's a really big shoe tonight. A really big show tonight.
We got 16 tons of atomic ore. We got next year's Army Navy score. And the first four battles of the Civil War.
It's a really big show tonight.
It's a really big show tonight.
Come on, baby. Let's do that twist.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1732. 5-5. So long. Until next time. So get up and twist. Get some exercise.
She really knows how to run. She knows how to twist. Do the twist.